Welcome to the Heartbreak Kids Podcast, where we explore what connects us all in our yoga practice and in our lives. This is where I talk to people about their stories, who they are, what they've been through, and where they're going. And in this podcast, that's what we explore. I believe deep down inside, we're all connected, which explains why we bring ourselves to the top of our mat every day. Welcome to the Heartbreak Kids.
Welcome to the next edition of the Heartbreak Kids. I'm here with Jason Etter, and Jason is from Wichita, Kansas. And I don't know, maybe 6-7 months ago, he came to the Trini Foundation Forum. And what's cool about it is like he immediately fell in with our crew. And, you know, it's cool because, you know, I've obviously never met anyone from Kansas. I didn't know that Ashtanga was there. But the cool thing is that he's fit in with our community almost immediately. And it was really like powerful to see someone who was in recovery and someone who was basically like just trying to dial into a deeper understanding of Ashtanga yoga and stuff. So I'm really happy to have you on the show today.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. So let's just start. Like, just tell me a little bit about like the backstory. Tell me about who Jason is.
Okay, well, as you mentioned, like, I'm a person in recovery. I've been in recovery for 6 years and sober for 2.
Awesome.
I came up to Columbus because of work. I work in the addiction treatment field.
Right.
And yoga's been a part of my own personal recovery for years. And I've been in and out, you know, with Oxford Houses, which is a sober living house, with AA, a 12-step program. But to take it all the way back, you know, if you want to know like where I come from, you know, and what I do, I was born in Wichita, Kansas,
yeah.
And then we moved to Colorado. And from there, it was just kind of a hectic, we moved from one place to another.
Why'd you move so much?
Because my dad was a businessman. He was building his career. So we lived in Thornton, Colorado for 3 years, and then we lived in Dallas for a year, and then we were back to Brighton, Colorado, which these are suburbs of Denver.
Right.
And then we were up in the mountains, like around Glenwood Springs and Aspen and Vail. We lived up there for a year, and then my parents got separated.
Okay.
And from there, both my parents were from this little town called El Dorado, Kansas, outside of Wichita.
Okay.
And when my parents separated, my mom wanted to be back around family and friends, so she took me and my younger brother and moved us there.
Okay.
And from there,
you went to high school and stuff there?
Yeah,
I went to high school. All the traveling, like, you know, well, what years were the traveling?
Oh man, like I went to probably 6 or 7 different elementary schools.
Did that mess with your head at
all? Oh yeah, like why? It was just so hard to make connections.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like I didn't have time to form bonds and connections with friends and just really just get to know people. It was like every time I felt like safe and secure, I was uprooted, you know?
Yeah.
And when my parents separated, I went to 4 different schools in a year.
Whoa.
Yeah, I went to 4 different semesters. So there was, 5th grade, I was in Carbondale. And then I was in Wichita, and then we moved to Dodge City in 6th grade, and then the last half of 6th grade, I landed in El Dorado, and that's where I stuck for a little while.
Wow.
Yeah, so
that's
really
where you finished school at, too?
Yeah, I didn't graduate,
okay.
But I went through high school and junior high there.
Okay.
You know,
you got your GED now?
Yeah, I got my GED. I do have some college underneath me, no degree.
Okay.
You know, so it goes with addiction,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. You struggled with addiction from an early age then?
Since I took my first hit of pot and my first drink when I was 11 years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Were you just trying to fit in? Is that why you did it?
Yeah. Yeah. More or less. You know, it was my older stepbrothers. It was my part of my new family, you know, and it was somebody to look forward to because I came from a good, you know, middle class family, but my father wasn't around that much, you know, he was always working. I mean, he was there as much as he could be. But my, you know, I was looking for somebody to look up to. Yeah. You know, I was looking for guidance. I was looking for acceptance.
And they were smoking weed.
Yeah, they were smoking weed.
So my, of course, you're doing it.
Yeah, you know, my oldest stepbrother, he, you know, he was lost. He was a gangbanger, you know. Okay. And then his younger brother, he was a, you know, skater and a pothead, you know. And
it was these are your step or real brothers?
These are my stepbrothers. Step, okay. Yeah, I only have one biological brother. Okay. And it's Seth, and he's a... He's pretty good. Yeah, he's all right.
You still have a connection with these stepbrothers?
Not my oldest one. My oldest one, his name is Tommy. He's out in California.
Okay.
And God knows what he's doing.
Yeah. You know?
My oldest, or the next one down, lives in El Dorado.
Okay.
Yeah, so he's there with me. I got a couple nephews. You know, my dad lives in El Dorado now. And yeah. I mean, there's long stories there. Yeah.
But it sounds like family was pretty important to you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. My dad, you know, he was a good father. You know, he raised me with important morals and values. You know, treat others how you want to be treated. Respect your elders. You know, put yourself in other people's shoes, you know.
Right.
You know, he always wanted me and my brothers to have good relationships. Because he's like, you know, one day we're not going to be here, so it's like, you know, you guys might be all you have at some point,
right.
You know, and I almost lost all that due to my addiction, you know, and that was a big
how
part
did you maintain, you know, like those kind of like moral ethical codes and be in addiction?
I didn't, okay. You know, I didn't, you know, I stole, I lied, I cheated, you know, just like the majority of us when we're in our disease, you
right.
know, but my family, they didn't give up on me, man, you know, they were always
they stuck around,
they really did, man, like, but that was a big part of me coming in 2012 was I was pushing so hard, like, I don't think there was much left, you know, to lose, you know, and it was them.
Because you lost it.
Yeah, I lost everything. I was living in my brother's basement, you know, he'd given me several places to stay, but that was like my existence at the end of my addiction, you know, it was like living in this dark hole of a basement, you know what I mean? Just completely withdrawn from the world, you know?
And you're telling me that it like caught up from like at 11, you know, like were you drinking and using like on a pretty consistent basis?
Yeah. Let me see if I can walk you through some of this. So I took just a little bit more of a background and I wanted to share this too. I thought a lot about this, you know, leading up to it, but I'm a survivor of a lot of different traumas, you know, and one of them was sexual abuse,
okay.
You know, and that was a big thing. I didn't have anybody talk to about it, you know, and then you have that was an adolescent, you know, and then all the moving around and then my parents getting divorced, you know, so like my whole childhood was like a perfect storm to become an addict, you know what I mean? So by the time I landed in El Dorado with my mother, you know, like, she didn't know what to do with me. You know, she couldn't handle me. You know, she didn't know what I was going through. I had all these emotions. I didn't know how to deal with them. I didn't even know what was going on with me, you know? So when I was looking up to these people, you know, and just looking for acceptance and somebody to like want me and to care about me, you know, when I took that hit of pot and that drink, like all that
went away. Yeah, same here too.
Yeah, man. There's so many similarities between me and you, and I'll share that down the way. It kind of blew me away and kind of what led me up here too. But so I took my first hit and I drank Old English malt liquor was my first drink. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. It's like a pot. Yeah.
What's that? Boys in the Hood?
Yes. I remember I was drinking and my oldest stepbrother, he was like, man, like, you're just sipping, like, stop being a pussy. And you know how you take the bottom of the beer and they bang it on it. And he did that and it broke the lid, but I couldn't not drink it, right?
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there just chugging this malt liquor and it cuts my lips. So this is my first experience. Like, my first experience is I got like blood running down my face, malt liquor running down my face. And mind you, I'm 11 years old. You know what I mean?
Like, holy crap.
Yeah, it was nuts, man. It was absolute nuts.
Sounds like a perfect storm from the very beginning.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was a mess, man. There was nightmares, man. But I didn't really get consistent with it like, until it was like my eighth grade summer. And I how we do. We find all the kids that are just like us. You know what I mean?
Of course.
You know, the ones that are... from broken homes or, you know, that are have their own internal struggle, and we all use it and all looking for acceptance and that and things like
right.
that.
You find know? It in bad connections
yes.
or people that are
exactly. Good. So yeah. I found all those people in El Dorado, and we got into a lot of trouble, man. I remember we got in so much trouble. My dad was still living in Colorado, and like the last part of my eighth grade years, like the last 2 months, he yanked me out of Kansas because my mom couldn't handle me.
Really?
And he pulled me up to the Rocky Mountains and was like, look, you got to get your shit together. Yeah. And I knew how to play the system. You know, I was very manipulative from the get-go. You know, I knew how to get what I wanted out of any right. situation. And, and you know, looking back, I don't know if I was conscious if I knew what I was doing or not, you know. Maybe I knew exactly what I was doing. Maybe it was just survival.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But so I go up there. I'm doing good. I'm getting good grades. You know, I'm doing good in middle school. I'm running track, you know. Smoking a little bit of pot with my brothers, but no, like, real trouble. You know, I'm not skipping school. I'm not failing out of school. And that was the deal. They were like, if you do good, you can go back. You know, you can go back and you can live in El Dorado. And that was probably one of the worst things that could happen to me. Sometimes
you did go back though.
Yeah, I did. And that's exactly what I wanted. You know, I wanted to be back around my people. I wanted to be back, you know, running with my friends,
right.
you know, my friends. I did air quotation marks. Yeah. Because I can't see it. You know?
Yeah. For listeners.
For the listeners, you know. So fast forward, it's like in between my, was it eighth grade and ninth grade year, like that summer, man, and we're getting into all sorts of trouble. Like some of my major points is like, I remember me and my friends broke out a window and burglarized liquor stores, you know, and we're drinking in the park. You know, we were just, you know, robbing drug dealers and shit like that. You know, not like gunpoint shit, you know what I mean? Like we were, you know, I wasn't some Wild West, you know, gangster at 13, you know, but, you know, I remember I was in the streets of El Dorado, Kansas. I was walking down in that dark alley at like 4 o'clock in the morning, and I had a pound of marijuana, you know, in my waistline, you know what I mean? So like, so that's like, you know, that's a start, you know. And as I continued on, I got put on probation, and then I'd violate that, and I got put on corrections, and I'd violate that, and they, you know, I just didn't want to be present, man. You know, I just did not want to be present with myself. I didn't want to be present.
Yeah. You think that you were trying to get some attention or something?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. I think attention was definitely a big part of it, man. You know, I wanted, but then they would show me the attention because, like I told you, my dad pulled me out when he was living in Colorado. Well, he inevitably moved to El Dorado because of me. He uprooted my whole step family and moved down to El Dorado and still live there to this
just
day.
Just to try and take care of you?
Yeah, just to try and take care
of
me.
Is he still there today?
He's still there today.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. He owns a house, and my, like I said, some of my step family's still there, and he works in Wichita, and he does the whole deal there. So I got some of the attention, man. I just didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to live.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I didn't know how to tell anybody what I was going through. You know, they tried putting me in some drug counseling, but I wasn't willing. You know what I mean? I knew how to manipulate people. I knew how to tell them what they wanted to hear so I could pass their program and get out. Yeah, exactly, and go back to doing what I was. And inevitably, you know, looking back, it was like back in those days, those were some of my worst days. Like, I didn't care about myself, so there was no way I could care about anything else. I just did not.
Those are like the worst days of my, you know, my using and all that stuff, because it just felt, I mean, I felt alone, but I was just doing things that I just knew wasn't right. I just kept on doing them.
Well, I'm sure you remember those sober breaths, you know, like those sober breaths were intolerable for me at that age. You know what I mean? Like when, like those times in between, you know, being high and being sober, you know, when I'm on the hunt or, you know, going off to the next party or coming out of school, like I was everything, you know, that they said in recovery. You know, I was restless, irritable, and discontent all the time. You know, I was a prey to misery, depression, all those things. You know, that was all, I was riddled with that stuff. So using substances was like the only way I knew how to escape, you know. So fast forward a little bit, my parents are like, you know, you keep doing what you're doing, they're going to take you away from us, they're going to take you away, they're going to take you away, you know. And like I said, I just didn't give a fuck about myself, man. Yeah. And I didn't care what anybody else thought either. And they did. They took me away and put me in a boys' home in Kansas really? City when I was 17.
How long were you there? Until you were 18?
Yeah. Yeah, I was there 6 months, but again, I'm a master manipulator. And I was on track to be out of that program faster than anybody else. You know, I was yes ma'am, no ma'am. You know, what can I do? Where's let me get extra worksheets? You know, things like that.
Because you're like a people pleaser or something? Or?
I guess. I think I just.
Or you just being manipulative?
I just knew how to play the game. You know what I mean? I knew I wanted to get back to my people so I could get back to doing what I was doing, you know? And it was like, okay, I'm intelligent. You know, I see what you have going on here. And if I do X plus Y plus Z, then I can get back here in no time, you know?
Did that work for you though?
Yes and no. Yeah. Like I was doing pretty good, but then my roommate got caught sneaking girls in.
Oh, wow.
And I was part of that too. And we got caught up in that, you know? And so they got hip to the game and we were stuck there. I was stuck there till I was 18. And
wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you were on track to get out of there.
Yeah, man. I was hustling. I was just ready to get done, man. And get back to doing what I was doing. And it didn't matter when I got out of there. You know, I wasn't willing to change. But, you know, there was some things in there that started to crack. Maybe that was the beginning. Because they had me in different counseling and I had to go there and I had to be sober, you know. So yeah. I looked at it and I was like, I decided to seek out some counseling for some of the sexual abuse that I went through. And not thinking about it, I was underage, so I was a ward of the state, and they had to send all the reports to my parents about what I was going through. And they had no idea.
Wow.
Yeah, so they had to find out about that stuff when I was...
This was like from a family friend or something?
It was my papa was married... to this woman that he's no longer married to, is my mother's father.
Yeah.
And it was her son.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he, I don't know what happened to him, but it was like from the age 6 to 10.
Wow.
You know,
that had to be hard for the family.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, they were wrecked. And it still bogs my mom today. You know, my dad doesn't talk about it. You know, my dad's from that generation where they don't talk about anything. Yeah, no, not at all. You know what I mean? Like, he's proud of me and he's glad I'm doing what I'm doing and that's it. You know what I mean? He understands I struggle and I suffer. But so I'll try and fast forward this a little bit with my story. I get out, things are as worse as ever. I'm back in El Dorado and I inevitably end up using methamphetamine and cocaine intravenously. And that scared the shit out of me. I don't know why that was.
Super powerful.
Yeah. Yeah, man. And I had done everything under the sun. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. And I did it like 2 or 3 times. And I found myself stuck in my dad's mirror at like 4 in the morning because I was living with my dad. And I was like, I don't want this. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to become a needle junkie was the thought in my head. You know what I mean? Because that's what was happening all around me. And I'd already done everything under the sun, you know? And by the time it was all said and done, like, I laid those down and I up and I moved away. You know, next day I moved down to Pittsburgh, Kansas. Wow. That's where my mom lived, my biological mother. And I was still smoking pot and drinking because that's nothing to me, you know, back in those days compared to, you know, shooting methamphetamine. It's like, I can do this. I just can't do that, you know?
Can't do the bad stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, it was crazy, like, for a moment, a period of time, like, I actually got my shit together. You know, like, I was holding down a job for 6 months, which was the longest I'd ever held a job. I went to school. I went back to community college through my GED. Had a 3.5 GPA, but it was like the more that I stuck around, like the more I started smoking more and more pot, and the more I started drinking.
You think you smoked or, you know, did drugs because of anxiety or because?
Anxiety and depression.
Okay.
Yeah.
You struggled with depression too?
Yeah, I think depression was more than anxiety, honestly. I've honestly just in these past few years come to find out, like, actually admitting that I have anxiety. Like, I've always known I've had depression, but yeah, anxiety is a new thing for me, you know.
It's crazy too, like I've been experiencing a massive amount of anxiety that, you know, like, you know, sobriety is like an onion, you know,
yeah.
It's like you start peeling back and it's like, oh yeah. And I came to realize that I actually used because of anxiety.
Right.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I was depressed also, but anxiety was the reason why, you know, like, and it's fear-based and,
sure.
You know,
how all that goes.
Yeah, right.
I get it.
Yeah. So why don't you tell me a little bit about, like, you know, what the worst day that Jason had using is. Yeah, like, I mean, like, tell us, give us a snapshot of just, like, what Jason was at his lowest.
Okay.
Because I want to hear about the yoga. I want to hear about, like,
yeah,
you know, like,
yeah,
like mindfulness.
Where I,
you go, yeah.
Right, I understand. Okay, yeah. So some of the worst things, you know, like, I was a blackout drinker. I had 2 DUIs. You know, one of my worst nights was, one of the scariest moments in my life was waking up in jail and not knowing how I got there. You know, like I literally blacked out, woke up in jail and had no idea.
Because you were drinking?
Yeah, okay. I was drinking and eating Xanax.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, and I blacked out. And still to this day, I don't remember how I got there. I mean, obviously, I got a DUI and I know that, but like that piece of time is gone. And
yeah.
Like waking up in jail is the scariest feeling I've ever
yeah.
had. You know, I don't know if I hurt somebody. I don't know if I'm hurt. I don't know where my car is. I don't know. You know, what did I do? You know
right.
what I mean? Like, that was horrible. So that's that.
Totally dude. Freaks you out.
Yeah. So that's like one of the scariest moments, one of the lowest moments. Man, I remember was scouring the city for pills. I was going through withdrawals. And I remember getting those oxys, man. And I ate them. Or I ate one and I snorted one. And I ended up throwing up an Oxycontin on the street. And I ended up picking it back up and eating it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, that's the type of shit
I dropped mine
do.
Down the sink. And
yeah.
I ripped the whole sink apart.
I remember reading your book.
Yeah.
I remember that. It's like, I get this dude.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm looking in the mirror. I'm like, who's this person that I became?
Yeah,
that,
I don't understand.
Rips apart a sink in order to get this pill.
Man, it was, yeah. So those were some of my the lowest times there, man.
How'd you feel about yourself at that point?
Like a piece of shit, man.
Really?
You know, like, because the whole picture that I was drawing, man, was like, I had this, like, this whole adolescence, you know, was completely hopeless. You know,
yeah.
I didn't care about myself. And then I decided I want to try and get my shit together. And then I found out that I'm addicted still and
yeah.
I can't kick this thing. And it's like, you know, that feeling, like, now I feel utterly hopeless because I actually tried and I failed because of my addiction, you know? And it was like, there was like absolutely nothing I can do. I was defeated, you know? So that just led into those dark times of like living in my brother's basement, you know, jumping from job to job, you know, scouring the city and picking pills out of my puke and waking up in jail and shit. You
yeah.
know? So that was,
it gave me chills, man.
I
totally get it.
It's not a game, man. It's life and death out there for us, man. It is life and death, man.
Yeah.
That's why I take this stuff so seriously. You know, it's like, I don't want to die today.
Yeah.
I don't want to die.
So. Yeah. Wow. Thanks for sharing all that stuff.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, it makes me reflect a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds like we got a lot of similarities.
Yeah. You just real quick, you went to like this one little similarity that really got me. It was like, you said your dad owned grocery stores, right?
Yeah, or he owned a business that delivered to grocery stores.
Really?
Yeah,
okay. Yeah. See, my dad owned grocery stores when I was growing up.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean? And like he was a CPA and he worked for like major distributors, like Super Value of grocery stores.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn, this dude's, I mean, down to that T, I was like, man, like what's going on here? You know what I'm saying? Like I was like plugging pieces. So
that's crazy.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, there's a lot of similarities.
Yeah.
So how did you come to yoga?
Okay, so I got into the 12 steps, which as we know is a spiritual program of action to stay sober, right? And I worked those steps to the best of my ability with some old school sponsors, you know, and they had like these blacklist AA meetings. And when I say that, it sounds all dark and mysterious, but basically it was just some old timers holding unofficial AA meetings in their houses. You know what I mean? They weren't listed, you know what I mean? It's kind of like a lineage sponsor tree type deal.
Yeah.
Anyway, they were very deep into meditation and doing the steps and things
what
like that.
What kind of meditation?
Just like breath meditation, you know
really?
What I mean? Like okay, so like the format of the group, we would go in there and we'd find a topic out of the first 164 pages of the AA big book. And we'd read that topic, and then we'd meditate on that topic in our breath, and then we would share our experience for like 10 minutes. And I was doing this like 3 or 4 months sober, you know what I mean? And like,
it sounds like a good group of all in on.
Yeah, absolutely. They're heavily spiritual, you know, because I had no faith when I came in. I didn't know what to think of, you know, like my papa had a doctorate in theology and was a preacher, and then my dad, you know, spent some time growing up on the reservation. He's Native American. So I come from a very wide range of things, you know, and my parents never forced any of that down on me. So I was just, I had no conception of any type of God. So to start praying and learning about these prayers out of the big book, you know, third step prayer, seventh step prayer, like I still say those prayers at the end of my practice every day, you know, third step prayer and seventh step prayer, like help me, you know, I can't do this alone, you know what I mean? Thank you, I need your help, you know, because as soon as I start running the show, it's crazy, but sorry, I'm getting kind of off track there a little bit. So we were meditating, and I go through my first 9 steps, and my sponsor doesn't want me reading any spiritual books outside of the big book until I get through all my amends. And once I got through the amends, I was given 2 books, which one was New Seeds of Contemplation by Thomas Merton, and the other one was the Ram Dass Be Here.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
The new Seeds of Contemplation is freaking amazing.
Isn't it?
Oh,
isn't
my
it?
God.
Yeah, it is
Thomas
so
Merton
cool.
is like, whoa.
Yes.
I just reread it, actually.
Did you really?
Just reread it. Yeah, I reread the whole thing, and man, it is, I mean, it's revolutionary.
I know.
How he talks about Christ and how he talks about all this stuff. It just blows my mind.
Well, it's like this conception.
Trappist monk who...
It's like this conception that God dwells within.
I'm praying.
You know what I mean? Like,
which is totally revolutionary for a
Trappist
monk.
Yeah, absolutely.
A Catholic monk. It's just like, whoa.
Right.
He was a yogi.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, he was. He's done some cool work with Thich Nhat Hanh. Yeah. They were great friends. You know what I mean? And I really liked it, but I was still really new and really sober at that time. So that was a little bit denser for me, you know, at that time. And I didn't have any real background. So Ram Dass struck a chord with me.
Okay.
You know, so it was like this Eastern philosophy and the meditation that I was doing. And then it's like, I need to do more. How do I grow my spiritual life? So similar to yourself, like I was in my 10, 11, and 12, and it was like, how am I going to do this? You know, 10 step, 11 step, 12 step.
Yeah.
So I had a friend that was in the same circle of alcoholics, and she was a practicing Buddhist for like 10 years, and she was practicing vinyasa yoga for like 7, and she became certified as a yoga instructor at this studio, Siva, there in Wichita. And I was on the fence. I was in this place where like men don't do yoga, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I didn't want...
It's like the same exact thing I said. It's like, it's all for... Only girls do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I didn't want to
so
be
ridiculous.
Judged by people. That's all it was. You know what I mean? I was living in a sober living house. There was a bunch of bros around, you know, that only went to the gym and were chasing girls and this, that, and the other. And it was like, I just wanted to be accepted. You know, I was still working through a lot of that raw stuff, man. And it was like, when she told me that she had become a certified yoga teacher, I was like, okay, you know, like I'm listening, God, you know what I mean? I'm paying attention, you know what I mean? It's like, here's my opportunity, man. And I went to her class, and they had heaters, these red heaters, infrared heaters or whatnot there. And she had a playlist, and I was jamming, and I was doing my thing. And I went like 3 times, and I just fell in love with it, Taylor, man. Yeah, I just fell in love with it. You know, because I've never been an athlete. I've never done anything physical. I've never done anything like that. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, if you're drinking and using the heavy as what you're
right.
It's like,
right, exactly. So I did that, and I was going to this Vinyasa Flow class for, I don't know, like 3 years. And then in 2017, I got certified through their yoga program. And that was actually where I found out about Ashtanga for the first time, like as far as Asana and the primary series and whatnot. Because the teacher that owned the studio, he was based out of Ashtanga. Like he went through Ashtanga teacher training down in Arizona or something like that. So there was a lot of roots of Ashtanga in his training. And I just remember he took us through a modified version of the primary series. And I remember sitting in Yoga Mudra. And I remember locking in that practice and just the feeling, like I could feel the energy, you know, and it was like, oh man, like there's something here, you know, there's something here. I don't know what it is, but I like it, you know, because
yeah, it resonated. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I mean, it resonated for you?
Yeah, very much so. Very much so.
That energetic feeling that you get at the end of the practice is transformative.
It really is. It just lines up with everything. And it's like, I was all about tangible things. You know what I mean? Like, if I'm going to build a faith, if I'm going to believe in God, I'm going to live a spiritual life. Like, I need things that I can feel, I can touch, that I can see, you know, to build upon. And yoga gave me that. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like the changing, like the psychological change, you know, that was measurable. You know what I mean? You know, that energy shift that I felt in Yoga Mudra, that was measurable. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Being present was measurable, you know? And it was like, the more I did it, the more I changed, you know? And it was
cool. Did you dive right in from the get-go?
Yeah, I right after I got certified, I taught vinyasa for 6 months at that studio, which was an honor. It was kind of this full circle thing because the lady that introduced me there, she left to go teach art school at SCAD in Savannah, Georgia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she was pretty awesome. And when she left, I got to take over her class teaching it. So it was like this whole full circle completion thing. Yeah, it was so cool, man. It was so cool.
Yeah.
But as I found out more about Ashtanga, things would just pop up, man. It's just so weird how these synchronicities, things happen, and coincidences, air quotes again, if you will, when you're present, you know what I mean? When you're meditating, when you're doing the yoga thing, you know, like if you're just paying attention, like the path is laid out for you, you know? So like there was an old guy that practiced with us in the vinyasa studio, and he was like, I heard you're interested in Ashtanga. And he walked up to me in my job while I was working in a coffee house and gave me David Swenson's book, you know what I mean? And I was looking through, I was like, this is cool. You know, I was doing his little 15-minute practices, in the morning.
Yeah, man.
Like, I could do these 15-minute practices, you know. And it was. It was just very, it was neat. It was more meditative, you know. And that's what I came into yoga for in the first place, man, was to grow spiritually. You know what I mean? It was like, I need to learn about meditation. And I know yoga is like meditation.
And did you find that right away?
For the most, yes and no, because, you know, when you got to, comparatively speaking to my Ashtanga practice, well, looking back, no, but was it what I needed at the time? I think so, you know, I really think so, you know, because it started me where I needed to be started, you know, and it led me where I needed to be led. It was part of my path, man, so I did well.
And so I'm wondering, like, you know, how has it shifted in the time that you practice? Like, has it become more meditative now? Like, is it more of a spiritual practice for you? Like, how's it evolved?
Absolutely. I think I am facing more of myself now. Okay. Like, unresolved things. Like, you know, in recovery where they talk about riding on that pink cloud.
Yeah.
That was my vinyasa days. Right? Yeah. Right? You know, I'm chilling.
Everything's sunshine and pink clouds and rainbows.
You know, I'm having spiritual experience.
Yeah. Now you're in Ashtanga, you're in the dark. You're on the dark side.
I'm facing myself, man, is what I'm doing, you know? And that's so important, man. I'm growing, you know? Like, I'm having real growth, you know? I mean, any yoga is good yoga.
Yeah, of course.
Like, get it however you need to do it. Live your truth, whatever you need to do, you know. Yeah. I'll support you, you know. But there were so many missteps I was finding once I found my way in here, you know. And I didn't realize how much of a type A person that I was, you know. And, like, having that structure and that discipline and being
matters.
Able.
Yes,
matters, for sure. Yes. And that Tristana method that we were talking about today, so important, you know, for that inner reflection, like, that's what it's about for me, you know. Like, I'm not to a point where I'm doing, you know, like, I'm still working on binds, you know. Yeah. And that's okay, because I'm doing the best I can to be present on my mat, you know what I mean? And that's what it's about for me, you know. Like, the rest of the stuff will come as I show up, you know what I mean? And I will get more and more present as well, but every day I want to show up on my mat so I can go deeper.
Yeah, you've been consistent with that?
Yeah, I've gotten better. It's been growing. I'd say the past 2 months, I've showed up at least 5 to 6 days a week.
Wow, that's
pretty
good.
Yeah, well, I knew I was coming up here too. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
you're getting prepared.
Yeah, I was trying, man, but I tell you what, man, hitting that 5, 6 days a week, like, my body's opened up in ways I never thought, you know, and soreness and like learning about that self-care, which we've been talking about a lot this week, man. It's like, God.
Yeah, it's been a great week.
It really has. Yeah. And it's just getting started.
I know. Yeah, it's only day two. Yeah, day two, we're talking about
Jason. It's not this big over here.
Yeah. Oh, man. And so I'm wondering, like, how do you... Is the practice and your 12 steps, are they totally 100% related?
I think so. Okay. I think so. I mean, when I come on my mat, you know, like, this is pretty personal, but when I come on my mat, man, like, I say, God, you know, it's like, God, help me. You know what I mean? Help me in my practice. Help me get closer to you. Help me in whatever way you see fit, you know, and I do my practice. I chant. I do my practice, I end my practice, and it's like, God, thank you, you know, for getting me through that, you know, and helping me grow in that fashion every single time.
Sounds like it's deeply spiritual to you.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, that's what I started here for, man, because the fact of the matter was what I learned in AA, man, was like, God is something that is doing for me what I could not do for myself, you know what I mean? And if I don't continue to seek that, then I'm playing with fire. You know what I mean? To go back out is to die for me, man. And I'm not talking a physical death. I'm talking spiritual, mental, emotional, physical.
Financial.
You
know, you're definitely going broke financially.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure. But, you know, physical death is easy, man.
Yeah.
That's easy. You know, it's a spiritual death that one suffers. You know what I mean? So, yeah, when I come onto this mat, man, like, I'm going for God.
Man.
I'm going for God. I heard you on one of your podcasts recently. I can't remember who it was, but we were talking about how in a sauna was like a prayer.
Yeah.
You remember saying that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've thought and heard that before, but I haven't quite figured out quite what that means yet, you know, or what that means to
keep,
me.
Keep wrapping around
my head. Dude, like, you know, what does this mean when I'm in D? You know, what am I, you know, it's like, this is service to God. Is this my, what do they call it? Devotion. Know what I mean?
Yeah,
I don't know. It's cool.
It's really cool. Well, you told me why you practice. Thanks for sharing that
too. You were building up to that.
Yeah, I mean, I ask everyone. It's like, why do you practice? Like, what's that big connection? And you already told us, of course, you know?
That's it, man.
Yeah.
That's why I show up. And I love showing up here, you know? I love Columbus, man. I love the community up here. I love what you've built here, you know.
Well, I appreciate being here too, man.
Thank you.
You know, it's like, I appreciate like just the connections that we made so far, you know, just you coming up here a few times. And I mean, I realize how big of a commitment it is to come up here and stuff like that. But I mean, there's depth here, you know.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of people doing a lot of hard work and a lot of dedicated people.
It's a transformation.
It's beautiful. Yeah, it's a really good thing. Yeah, so tell me a little bit about like why the practice or maybe even how the practice really like resonates with you. Like what makes it the thing that you want to do on a consistent basis to get connected?
I think because it is so, it's like the parampara, right? So, it's a lineage, right?
Right.
It's so connected from so far back, you know, and it's like all these people, you know, like when we chant, you know, it's like connecting to that chain of yogis, you know what I mean? So it's like, that's where I find my connection at.
Got it.
You know, so I hope that answered that question.
No, that totally makes sense. I mean, it seems like, you know, the practice just like is such a holistic approach to so many different things.
Yes.
And it sounds like you get a lot out of the practice, whether it's spiritual or you know, mental or psychological or any of that stuff.
I'm working on the physical right now. You know what I mean? Like that's we were talking about at breakfast. Like it seems like I came in this kind of flip flop than most people. You know, I came in here seeking a spiritual solution and I found it, you know, and now I'm trying to get my body more on a physical plane, you know what I mean? So sometimes it happens the opposite way, you know?
Right.
However we find it, man, that's all that matters.
Does the practice mean a lot to you?
It means a lot to me, man. It does. Well, I'm up here. Yeah, you know what I mean? This is my third time here in just over 6 months.
Yeah.
You know?
Pretty awesome.
Yeah, I was up here for the last Trini Foundation, man, and I fell in love, you know, because these were my babies. Like, was passionate about my recovery. I was passionate about my yoga, you know, and they were two separate entities and they've slowly just kind of came together, man. And this
was gives you a way to be of service too.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So you're talking about 12th step. It's like, wow, it's like, you know, teaching classes and all that stuff. And, you know,
Watching people get it, or like their first time after they finish a yoga practice for the very first time, they're like, oh my God, I feel great. And I was like, yes, that's it. That's it. Just keep coming back. You know what I mean? Like, more will be revealed, man. You know?
Right.
And just keep showing up. That's all you got to do is one foot in front of the other, man. I mean, that's how I got here.
Yeah.
I didn't do nothing special. I ain't nobody special. You know what I mean? I just show up and I do the best that I can, man. And sometimes that's okay with me, and other times I fight myself. You know, I'm not perfect, but I do the best I can.
Yeah.
I'm going to show up.
So. Yeah, that's good stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you for being on the show and sharing your story and philosophy and your whys and all of that stuff.
Like,
it's pretty awesome. I appreciate you being a part of the community and, like, you know, like, you've become like a important person to a lot of us. So, yeah, appreciate you coming to Columbus and doing all that stuff. So.
Thank you, Taylor.
Yeah, thanks for being on the show, Jason.
Hey, guys. Thanks for tuning in. If you want more information about Ashtanga Yoga, visit AshtangaYogaColumbus.com. You can also check out my website, which is TaylorHuntYoga.com. See you guys next time.